scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in a left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk. Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, March 12th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge in the Scotiabank Saddle Dome with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. What's going on, Wes?
How are you today, buddy?
I'm good, man. I am really good, and we're getting set for a big showdown at the Dome on Wednesday night.
There's a buzz.
A little bit. But as head coach Ryan Huska has been quick to point out, it's a huge game, and so are the following 18 games after that. But this one does feel bigger. And you know, Coach Huska and the players inside that room, I fully respect and fully understand them saying, well, hold on. I mean, this game's big, but you know what? So is the next game and the next game. We got 19 huge games between here and the end of the season. I get that. But for us on the outside, this is a game against one of the top rivals for the Flames. They're separated by 1 point in the Western Conference standings for that final playoff spot in the Western Conference. Like, this is a big game without question. And it feels like, you know, just the text line and Twitter and you know, even watching that game between Vancouver and Montreal Tuesday night and knowing the stakes of that game, just it feels like a big night coming up on Wednesday here at the Dome, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and there's always, you know, I've talked to players sort of away from this environment, and what I mean is, like, you talk to them on days when the storyline isn't, oh, this is a biggest game of the year, and they'll tell you at that point that, yeah, when you get to those moments, you have to kind of downplay it, because what happens if it doesn't go your way, right? That part of what we're hearing from the Flames, I think, in the past few days, saying, well, yeah, it's an important game, but so are the rest of them, is, hey, if the Vancouver Canucks leave here with 2 points tonight, it can't feel like
the season's over.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be that the season's over.
No, 100%. So, they'd still be in the driver's seat, because they'd still be a point back with a game in hand, even if they lose this game in regulation today.
But I think what's sort of cool about this is the buzz that it's generated in the city. Like, this is the proverbial four-pointer. This is a game that has been circled for a while. This maybe is a chance to really do some significant damage to your rivals. Like, the Canucks are reeling, and the Flames have an opportunity tonight to be 3 points up, and that would be a big deal. Like, again, it's not the end of the season for anybody, but it would be a big deal. And so I got to tell you, this is as pumped as I've been for a regular season game in recent memory. Obviously, you've had some special ones, like Mika Kiprusoff's jersey retirement. Like, there's been ones that I've been maybe excited for other reasons, but this is a game that I really can't wait to watch.
One guy I'm really looking forward to, and we'll expand it from just this game that is going to be played on Wednesday night, and we'll talk about just the playoff push as a whole. But one guy I'm really looking forward to watching in this game and in the final 19 games, because I really like the way that he's trending, is Martin Pospisil. We talked a little bit about him on Tuesday's roundtable with Derek, and for the first time this season, Wes, it feels like Martin Pospisil has really found his game. It feels like we're seeing Pospisil the same way that we saw him burst onto the scene last year when he turned into one of their most important players. He's been drawing penalties of late. I know Danny Austin wrote about this over at your colleague over at Post Media wrote about this on Wednesday, and that is the fact that he and Nazem Kadri are both top 10 in the NHL. They're tied for sixth with about nine other guys with 26 drawn penalties this year. Pospisil's also sixth overall in the NHL in drawn penalties per 60 minutes based on how much he plays. It really feels like he's found his game. And I just, in a playoff push like this, when games get more tightly contested, more emotional, there's more on the line with each shift as we move further into March and into April, a Pospisil on his game, I think, goes a long way to, A, helping the Flames get to the playoffs, and then if they get there, geez, how big could a guy like Martin Pospisil on his game be for the Flames if they're playing postseason hockey next month?
Yeah, and I just want to add kind of one layer to that, and that's that we know this is a team that struggles to score, period, struggles to score at even strength, but has felt a lot better about their power play. I was going to say of late, but it's not just that. They've felt a lot better about their power play over an extended stretch now. And so if you can have a guy like Pospisil taking advantage of third line shifts to draw penalties, and that's putting you back out on the power play, this is a Flames team that's going to need to maximize its power play opportunities. It's going to be one of the ways that they can manufacture a little bit more offense. And so that makes it all the more important. I think Martin Pospisil has been a really interesting story. Like, here we are in March and we're talking about penalties drawn, and remember in October and November, all the focus was on penalties taken. All the focus was on...
That's right. He took a couple of bad ones in the early stages of the regular season that ended up, you know, potentially really hurting the Flames or taking momentum away, ozone penalties.
Yeah.
And that was one of the really big conversations. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and so it kind of went in three stages so far, and we'd be in the third one now, but it was Martin Pospisil taking too many penalties, you know, admitted on at least one occasion that he cost his team 2 points. Then you had a Martin Pospisil, this would be phase two for me, you had a Martin Pospisil totally out of sorts, wasn't taking penalties, but that's because he wasn't involved the way that you would expect him to be. That's because, you know, his game took a real turn towards tentative, at least tentative on the Pospisil scale, and that wasn't really working for anybody. And so this would be kind of the third phase or stage of the season for me, and that's a guy who I think has gotten back to some of what he does best, a guy who has gotten over the fear of taking penalties. And I had a quiet conversation with him a couple months ago. He said, yeah, it was in my head big time at the start of the season.
Yeah, that, and he's playing center for the first time in the NHL.
And he took some criticism. I remember writing once or twice about him costing his team in key moments. Martin Pospisil knew that was a hot-button issue, and I think he had trouble dealing with that. And so I think there's a lot to like about his game of late. Martin Pospisil set an unrealistic expectation for himself last year. And by that, I just mean Martin Pospisil wasn't going to be able to play the way he played in his first 20 NHL games for a long stretch, right? Like, you couldn't make a career of running around the way he does. At least I don't think so. And so he needed to find a game that was close to that edge, but also sort of maintainable over an extended stretch. And I think we're seeing a guy who's starting to find that groove a little.
Remember last year, and you would remember this, but because you were the person who asked him, but remember last year, a little less than a year ago, on Green Garbage Bag Day or Locker Cleanout Day, you asked Martin Pospisil, he was up on stage, and he said, you know, there's a little bit of a reputation starting to build with you about, you know, like not being one of the least popular players in the NHL and maybe taking some liberties and maybe being a guy who other teams don't like and think crosses the line, to paraphrase your question. And your question was, what's your response to that? And his answer was pretty simple. It's like, I don't really care. I don't care what other people think.
And what I asked him, if I can just jump in, I asked him what he thinks his reputation
across the NHL was.
And that was...
I don't really care what other people think about me.
Yeah, two memorable parts of that answer was him just saying, I don't care, and Connor Zary seated beside him bursting out laughing.
Yep. And he's playing right now like he doesn't care about his reputation. And I think that that is of crucial importance because I think, look, they missed the playoffs by a mile last year, and we all know why. They traded away, you know, three core players and an everyday defenseman for, you know, not a lot of immediate help in the midst of last season. So we all know why the Flames missed the playoffs by a large chunk last year. But one of their X factors throughout the year and one of the things that made them interesting to watch was Pospisil. And as a rookie, didn't put up a ton of points. As a rookie, wasn't a guy that was scoring a ton of huge goals, but you know what he was doing? He was playing a pretty crucial role in this team doing other things. And that, you know, I look back at his rookie season and I say, that's the type of guy you want to see every night, and we just haven't seen that on a regular basis. And that type of player, if you can make it into the playoffs, I think goes a long way in being able to get under the skin of whoever you're playing in a best of seven.
Yeah, and I think if this team finds its way into the playoffs, you'll see Martin Pospisil actually play a lot closer to the way that he did last season. You know, when I said a few minutes ago that he played a way that you can't really maintain, I mean that in two ways. I mean that because he was on the phone with the Department of Player Safety a lot. He was suspended once. He actually dodged a suspension another time that I thought they'd sit him down again. And so it's hard to continue to play that way once you're a repeat offender. And the other reason I mention that is he was also injured a couple times last year. He was playing such a physical brand that, excuse me, it was taking a real toll on his body. And so I think it's slightly watered down from last year, but it has to be. I think in a playoff series, you might see the Martin Pospisil you saw last November and December, where he is running around like crazy, hitting everything, driving people bananas.
It's starting to feel more like that guy of late, and I will give him a lot of credit because I think it's a big reason, as we talked about on the roundtable on Tuesday, I think it's a big reason why I think Wes is dying over there, so I'm just gonna talk for a little bit. He'll be fine. I think it's a big reason why they went and they've kept Zary on the fourth line, and they continued to keep Pospisil with Frost and Sharon Govich. And I even asked Ryan Huska about it when we had the opportunity, Derek and Mick and the TV broadcasters, and I have a chance to just chat with Ryan Huska for a few minutes after he does his general availability each game day here at home. And I asked him about Pospisil. He says, yeah, it really feels like he's been able to open those guys up on that line. And because he's just been given the role of go, forecheck, hard, skate, and it feels like maybe he's starting to look a whole lot closer to that guy. You're right, you can't do that all season. It was the Michael Ferland conversation coming out of the 2015 playoffs, right? And he was never close to the same guy again.
Right.
But that's because you can't play that way for 82 regular season games. But now that we're into the final quarter of the season, it sure does feel like we're seeing it a whole lot more from Pospisil.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're seeing a guy who's kind of found the, I suppose, happy medium between what he was last year and what he can be throughout his career. And that's a guy who is going to be really crucial to the Flames, whether it's drawing penalties, whether it's using his speed, whether it's irking opponents, even if that doesn't come with a power play opportunity. That's something they need more of. And they've got him in a spot in the lineup. You know, nobody's terrified of Yegor Sharangovich or Morgan Frost. Those are not guys who play a physical brand at all. Martin Pospisil gives that line some edge.
This text comes in, says, Pospisil just seems to do better when you give him less to do, skate and hit, and he'll be successful. But when he was playing with the higher lines and it was score, pass, don't take offense penalties, it was too much for him. And I do, look, I fully understood the reasoning of giving it a run at center. Obviously, it didn't work. Obviously, it wasn't something that was at least a fit for the rest of this season. I got why they tried it, but I do think that it kind of took away from his effectiveness. And as he was being less effective, the team also, whether his confidence wasn't as high, and he got away from his game. And even when they moved him back to the wing, he wasn't the same guy. So I get why they did it, but I also think that first half of the season there were a lot of things that he had to figure out and work to. He's had to work to get his game back here.
Yeah, and I keep going back to those penalty issues he had early in the season. You know, it's one thing when you're maybe struggling and you're not having a huge impact. Like, you could look at some stretches maybe in December and January. We just didn't really talk about Martin Pospisil. It's a different story when the talk is that you're hurting your team, right? We went through preseason where it was, oh my gosh, he's going to get an opportunity to center the Huberdeau line. You know, this could be a big deal. And then we go through a stretch where the talk around Calgary was, man, maybe they win that game last night if it wasn't for Martin Pospisil.
Yeah.
And that's hard for a player to deal with. And I can understand why that sort of neutered his game for a while. I can understand why the result was such a tentative style of play, especially when he was also loading or layering on some of the defensive responsibilities as center. And so this is a fit for Martin Pospisil, right? Like, third line winger is kind of where Martin Pospisil, I believe, should fit in an NHL lineup. And I think now they have him slotted properly to really use some of the skills that make him effective.
So, as we're underway, it's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks for being with us. If you're listening live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, the text line is open at 960-960. If you're listening on the podcast, thanks for hanging out with us as well. This says, as you guys mentioned before, I think it can be a huge asset. Pospisil can be a huge asset in the playoffs as far as creating momentum and just being hard to play against. People who bring energy are a huge asset come playoff time. This from Bill in Calgary. Totally agree. Shades of Michael Ferland. Also not that dissimilar in many ways to Sam Bennett. Penalties, great in the playoffs, but can't play that way for 82 games. The Bennett conversation's interesting because that was one of the things that Craig Conroy was talking about when they moved Pospisil to the middle. They felt like he could drive the middle, play with that type of pace, similar to what Sam Bennett did in Florida on that line with Jonathan Huberdeau, was a big reason why they wanted to give it a run with Pospisil down the middle.
Yeah, and Sam Bennett, if we kind of focus on the penalty part of the discussion, it took Sam Bennett, and he still crosses the line from time to time, but took Sam Bennett some time to really figure it out, right? Took Sam Bennett some time to figure out what he could do and what he could get away with. I'd even use certainly a different player than Martin Pospisil, but I'd even use Nazem Kadri as an example of a guy who needed to learn how to stay on the right side of that line. And I'm not referring only to the suspensions come playoff time, but just to not putting your team in a tough spot. Now, those Bennett and Kadri, when they went through those situations, were still really young guys. It was really early in their career. Martin Pospisil was a little bit older, but because
he is still early in his NHL career.
Well, and he's
though.
Still early, I would say, in his development in some ways.
Because of all those concussions.
Missed a ton of time, made the impossible jump from the USHL to the American Hockey League. You know, like I can't think of how many guys have gone from junior A to the A in their career, but, you know, he missed a step in his development, and unfortunately that was sort of a necessity. The college route wasn't going to pan out for him, but there were a bunch of curveballs for Martin Pospisil that sort of, while he's 25, I believe, I think you could treat him more like a 21 or 22-year-old prospect.
In terms of development. This says, Pospisil's play on the boards is highly underrated. His ability to free up pucks, forecheck, and backcheck is top-notch and doesn't get nearly the recognition it deserves, especially now that he's cleaned up his play. So it's definitely been a nice run here from Martin Pospisil, and he remains on that line for Wednesday night with Morgan Frost and with Yegor Sharangovich. I am curious to see, as the year goes along, where Zeri ends up. Like, I don't think he's long for the fourth line. That's not where he is best suited. But there's, at this stage, there's a lot of guys that you can say, like, are they best suited on the fourth line? I have not been overly enamored with the play of Yegor Sharangovich, but that's not a fourth-line type player, especially when you're talking about Lomberg and Rooney as the other guys. So when you think about the way that this team is kind of shaken out, especially if Pospisil, unless they move him back to the fourth line, which could very well happen, but they're really liking him right now on the Frost line, there's going to be somebody on that fourth trio that feels a little out of place in a lot of ways, hey?
Well, and I think one of the findings of the last little while has been that while Martin Pospisil has the sort of, you know, snarl or snark that makes him suited for a fourth line, he's not really suited for the fourth line in the sense of he's not nearly as effective when he's not playing as much. Like, I don't think Martin Pospisil had the change the face of the fourth line impact that we thought he would. And I think what the Flames have realized is twofold. They need Pospisil playing more, but they also need that sort of player mixed in their top nine. Like, they don't have enough of that rugged physical presence in those top nine slots. And I think that's a big reason why Martin Pospisil was moved back up. And so I'm with you, my friend. Like, I'm curious where this goes with Zeri. And Sharangovich, for me, is exactly the right guy to mention in that conversation, because I kind of wonder if Connor Zeri gets a look sooner than later with Frost and with Pospisil. We know he's worked with Pospisil in the past. We haven't seen it with Morgan Frost. You know, we wondered on the round table a while ago if those two players were maybe too similar to mesh as great line mates, but I think we'll see them give it another try, especially if Yegor Sharangovich, who is shooting the puck a little bit more, but I think still comes in waves when it comes to the consistency or the competitiveness that the Flames want to see out of him. Like, he's got to... I know he's not running people through the boards, but he's got to win more battles. He's got to up his engagement, at least from my perspective, on a more consistent basis to be the type of player that he was even last season for this team. And, you know, I'll throw one more name in this conversation, because to me, the return today of Adam Klapka, recalled from the AHL Wranglers, that gives you a guy that you can put in who is a fourth
line. That he fits on the fourth line, right?
And so I wonder, is the next move that someone comes out of the top nine, but coming out of the top nine does not mean a
you
spot on the fourth
line.
It just might mean a night off.
Yep.
If I were Yegor Sharangovich, who was healthy scratch not too long ago, I'd be wondering if I'm putting myself back in that territory.
I do wonder what we're going to see from Sharangovich here in the final quarter. It's been an underwhelming season. It's been an underwhelming last little stretch for him. And I, at this stage, with the way he's playing, I worry about what type of impact, if any, a guy like him can make in the playoffs when it becomes even more hard to play and even more difficult to generate offense. It becomes that much more physical. I mean, Ryan Huska has talked multiple times about how when you have the offensive skill of a guy like Sharangovich, that's awesome and they want to see it, but he needs to work to get to those spots and hasn't been working at it anywhere near enough. And not that he hasn't been working, but hasn't been winning those battles. And they need him to dig in. They don't need him to be physical. They don't need him to, you know, be engaged in a bunch of corner battles or anything like that. But fights for the puck, 50-50 battles in loose ice, he's got to do a better job on. And he, you know, as a result, hasn't been putting himself in a lot of quality scoring opportunities for most of this season.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of lack of engagement in those battles. And like you said, nobody thinks Yegor Sharangovich is going to put a guy in the seventh row, but it can't be a, you know, light stick swing on the way by in the corner.
Yep.
You know, it's got to be stopped there and engaged and trying to get that puck back. And, you know, I think you saw even the other night against Montreal, I believe he played about 13 minutes in that game. He's a guy who, as a game wears on, it's become more and more common, and this wasn't the case last year. It's become more and more common to see his ice time get decreased in the third period, especially as the Flames
yep.
are trying to protect a lead. You know, he's kind of been hit and miss in terms of his involvement on the penalty kill, and so he certainly is one of those guys that you target if you and I were going to sit here, I suppose, and make a list of who needs to be better over these last 19 games,
he'd be at the top.
I think he'd have to be at the very top, yeah.
A few more texts at 960-960. Tyler in PEI says, been listening for years, always appreciate the chats. They need to stop putting Zeri on the fourth line. Scared it's hurting him more than it's doing him any good. Just my opinion. That comes from Tyler in PEI.
Let me jump in for a second.
Yeah,
two things. PEI is one of the greatest places in the world. I had a good chat. This is the second thing. I had a good chat with Connor Zeri today. And you've got a guy there who doesn't feel like his game has gotten back to the level it was at pre-injury. And I'm not sure if more ice time might help him with that. Like, I certainly see him as a square peg on that fourth line, but I'm curious to see how they find him more ice time, how they help boost his confidence as he works his way back from that knee injury. You know, he'd be the first to tell you that offensively, and it's not just what's showing up on the score sheet, but offensively, he doesn't think he has either the confidence or the impact that he expects himself to have. And this is a guy, and you'd know it well, Pat, from talking to him, he's really hard on himself. And I think right now, you know, he's feeling the weight of not producing to his own expectations. I'm curious how Ryan Huska and his teammates and so on can help kind of drag him out of that.
This says from Colin Drumheller, he won't put a guy in the seventh row, but Sharon Govich sure will piss off a guy in the seventh row. I like that. This one from Pat, who says it's the sunscreen line, Sharon Govich, Pospisil Frost, SPF. I like that. And Scott in Yorkton says, I don't think that people realize how hard playing on the first line can be. I like what Husk has been doing, having the two switching back and forth and giving them some success on the fourth line and rewarding them with the first line, also giving them experience on the top line so that they understand, but then also showing them where they can be freewheeling on the fourth line. 960-960 on the text line. You can always get a hold of us. It's Pat and Wes on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Virgie, Azam Ali Nanji. They're making sure everything goes to air properly. Back at our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. It's a big showdown between the Flames and Vancouver Canucks on Wednesday night. Dustin Wolf will get the start in net. No surprise there. He picked up the shutout on Saturday in that big 1-0 win over Montreal. But I wonder, I asked this question because it is Dustin Wolf getting the start and you know, hasn't played in a lot of games of this magnitude. We know how big a deal this game is between the Flames and Vancouver Canucks, even though each team will have, what, 17 for the Canucks, 18 for the Flames remaining after this. But how important are nights like this for Dustin when it comes to his development?
I think every night is important for him. He's still making his way around the National Hockey League for the first time and playing against teams that he hasn't played against before and playing in buildings that he hasn't played in before. Now, he has played one game against the Canucks, and it was in this building, and he was really good in that game on New Year's Eve, stopping 23 of 24 in a 3-1 Flames win. But every game is important for Dustin Wolf because this is his first season as a full-time NHLer. And he just continues to gain experience. But, you know, I will say that the team is really downplaying the importance of this game against the Canucks.
Yeah.
We all know it's big. They know it's big. But they are trying to downplay it because they don't want to make it out to be the biggest game of the season or some sort of do or die or must win, because what happens if you lose? I mean, you've still got 18 games and you've still got a great chance to get to the playoffs. And just thinking about how Dustin Wolf has handled everything to this point in his career, he never seems to get too high. He never seems to get too low. So I suspect that Dustin Wolf is probably approaching this game against the Canucks, which I think is the biggest game the Flames have played so far this season, as just another game.
And I think that's the sort of cool part or the most encouraging part for Flames fans? Like when Pat sent me the questions for the roundtable today, I was out walking my dog, and so I was thinking about, like, okay, well, how big is tonight for Dustin Wolf? And quite honestly, guys, yeah, any high-stakes, high-pressure game is good for the development of a young goalie, but nothing could happen tonight that would change the way I or you guys or anyone in this organization feels about Dustin Wolf. Like, I think you could make the argument that tonight doesn't really mean much to the development of Dustin Wolf, because what we've seen so far has just been such a consistent example of even keel, not too high, not too low, the moment's never too big. Hey, high-pressure games, they're really good for rookies. They're good for young guys. They're good for guys like Joel Hanley who have never played huge minutes in big-time games. And yet, I don't know, there's just this feeling I have, like, we kind of already know with Dustin Wolf. And I think that's so encouraging and promising for what this means for the next 10 years or whatever it happens to be. Is just, I don't think we're going to look back on that game in 2025 against the Canucks as anything more than just another one for Dustin Wolf. And I'm not sure I'd say that about a lot of young goalies.
I will say, though, the fact that, like, say that that's exactly what happens. He just goes out and has a, you know, cold-blooded, typical Dustin Wolf-type night, but he does it in these stakes. Like, to me, that is important in his development, because it just shows him, shows the coaching staff, shows us that he can, shows us that he can do that and can be the same guy even in the most high pressure scenarios. To me, that is a really important thing. So I actually think that if we see him play the same way that he always does in this game against the Canucks, that's a real step forward for him. And I'm really interested to see if he can do, I don't, maybe step forward is the wrong way of putting it, but it's just another check mark in the who we think Dustin Wolf is, and I think another check mark for him. And like, yep, just played a massive game in the regular season. That's another preparation point for if I'm playing in the playoffs next month, yeah. So on and so forth. So I do think it's important for the development.
It absolutely is, but I think every game is. The fact that the Flames are fighting for a playoff spot and are in the driver's seat with 19 games to go means that Dustin Wolf and all the other players are playing in meaningful games down the stretch, which most people didn't think that they would be. So I think this has been a huge development for the development of Dustin Wolf and some other young players on this team, and even older guys who maybe we haven't played in games that mean this much at this time of the season. But maybe I'd feel a little bit differently if this was, say, game 81 against the Kings, and you've got an opportunity to punch your ticket to the postseason with a win, as the Flames did in game 81 back in 2015. You know, that felt like a must-win game, do or die. And I know they still had one more game to play and could have done it in game 82, but it doesn't feel that way to me. As big as this game is, and I do think it's the biggest game the Flames have played so far this season, if they lose to the Canucks tonight, they've got 18 games to figure it out, and they've got a game in hand. So it's a big game, but it's not at that level, at least not for me.
So maybe, guys, maybe what we're saying or maybe what I'm feeling, and I know Pat has talked about the importance of a night like tonight, but is maybe the final 5 weeks more important sort of as a whole for the development of Dustin Wolf than one particular night at this point? Like if Dustin Wolf gave up 8 tonight but had a really strong finishing stretch, I don't think there'd be any panic. If Dustin Wolf doesn't falter in any way down the stretch, it's only going to reinforce A, Dustin Wolf's confidence, which is already really high, and B, the Flames' confidence that, yeah, this guy is going to be really good for a long time.
Yes. Unless or until there's a night where it does feel like it's do or die, or is
sure.
do or die for the team. And then
yeah.
I think the pressure ramps up on everybody.
For sure. This is it's just got to get this one. You don't even need to get this one to get to the playoffs. But you know, there's a big one for him to solidify a little bit more what he is. But, no, I'm with you. There's still, after this game against the Canucks, there's still 18 games to go. And even if they win this game, even if Wolf is perfect again, they could still miss the playoffs. So it doesn't change the fact that, yeah, there's still some really, really big games coming forward here.
Like, for example, what happens if we get to April 17th? It's the last game of the season for the Flames. I think it might be the last game of the season in the NHL.
It is.
Because it's that rescheduled game from when they had the wildfires in Southern California. What happens if we get to April 17th at Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles and the Flames have to win to get in? Now we're talking about a different kettle of fish.
You know what we're not doing is discussing on the roundtable on April 16th, who do you start in L.A.? Because that is what Dustin Wolf has accomplished this season.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
He's put himself in a position that he's going to be the guy in these games. It's funny, I walked into, as you guys did, walked into the Flames locker room after morning skate today, and I looked over, and Dustin Wolf was sitting there. It looked like his heart rate was at roughly 35. Like, just totally what he's going to be giving off to his teammates in the next 2 hours and 15 minutes is exactly what they've been preaching. Yeah, it's just another game.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, boys, who do we play tonight? So it's just another game.
Can I tell you guys a quick story? Because what you just said reminded me of it. So traveling back in time to 2006, 2007, so long time before I'm even calling NHL games. I was calling AHL games for the Hamilton Bulldogs. They pulled off three upsets to start the playoffs, beat the Rochester Americans, and then the Manitoba Moose, and then the Chicago Wolves in the Western Conference Final to set up a Calder Cup Final against the defending champion Hershey Bears, who were huge favorites. They had home ice advantage, and I remember on the bulletin board, back when there were actually bulletin boards inside of the dressing room, they had printed the parade route in the paper before game one of the best of seven series. So going into the playoffs that year.
No, they didn't.
They did.
Wow.
It was a big mistake. Going into the playoffs that year, the Hamilton Bulldogs' two goaltenders were Yaroslav Halak, who was the best goalie in the AHL that season, and Jan Denny, who was a pretty good goaltender at the AHL level. And then Bob Gainey, who was the general manager of the Canadiens, told the team that he was going to send Halak to the World Championships, and that he was bringing up this goaltender from Major Junior to join the Hamilton Bulldogs for the final few games of the regular season. His name was Carey Price, 19 years old, obviously a first-round pick, but still 19 years old, and you just lost the best goaltender in the league, and you got this kid coming out of junior. So played well in a few regular season games, played really well throughout the playoffs. Going into game one of the Calder Cup final, there was a big electrical storm in Hershey, Pennsylvania. The game was delayed over an hour. The officials couldn't even get to the rink. What was Carey Price doing? Sleeping on the floor of the dressing room.
Yeah.
So the whole heart rate thing you just said about Dustin Wolf, it reminds me of Carey Price. And I think that's a trait that some of the best goaltenders in the history of the game have had, is that it doesn't matter what's going on. Their heart rate, it pretty much stays the same.
Pretty level,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah. Sorry for that long story. But
Dustin Wolf has that like all day, every day.
Yeah.
That dude doesn't break a sweat when things get tough.
And the best goalies not only have that, but they sort of show it. They figure out a way to make sure their teammates know.
Their teammates feel it.
Yeah. And that's what I looked over at Dustin Wolf today, and he might have been sleeping for all I know. He was just kind of zoned out in his stall, and it's like, oh, yeah, this – it's not bugging him one bit.
Yep. It's Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable. On a night that Dustin Wolf had zero impact in the game, the Flames and Canucks, who will play Wednesday night for the fourth and final time, they started the regular season against one another way back on
October 9th.
There it is right there. A Wednesday night, October 9th, national television, just like this one is.
Wacky Wednesday.
Canucks. That's right, Wacky
you
Wednesday.
You called that game
indeed.
With me.
No, Parker did.
Oh, that's right.
It was
you
a 4-1
Canucks lead after 20 minutes of play. They'd open up a 3-0 lead, map the scores to make it 3-1, then the penalty circus with the JT Miller hit on Kevin Rooney. Canucks score. It's 4-1. Looks like this is going to be elementary the rest of the way. We got our first Rasmus Anderson death stare that night. We got the Flames taking a 5-4 lead before JT Miller ties it, and then a gorgeous Connor Zary winner. My question, though, is this, and a couple of guys have been asked about this over the last couple of days as well. Guys, for both teams, the Flames a point up on the Canucks for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. For both teams, how much did October 9th set the stage or set the table for what this year was going to be?
Well, I hadn't really thought about it from a Canucks perspective until today, but from a Flames perspective, I can tell you that I've talked to a number of coaches and players throughout the season and have asked them that question. And all of them have said it absolutely helped us set the tone for this season. And remember when the Flames had a really strong preseason and we all sat here and said, yeah, that's great, but you don't take anything from preseason into the regular season unless you can carry it over. Like, the points don't come with you, but if you play well and you build some intangibles like confidence and momentum and swagger, and then you take that into the regular season with you, then yeah, maybe it means something. So for the Flames, I thought it was important for them to do that. And to your point, Pat, it didn't look like they were going to. Down 4-1 in the first period of that game, and they came unraveled after that hit that JT Miller threw on Kevin Rooney and just tried to kill him for the rest of the first period. And then they settled down, and I think that was a sign of maturity. And I think it was a really important time for the leadership group of six or seven guys to have their say and to just get the group back to where they needed to be mentally and physically. And then for them to continue to build belief by battling back and winning that hockey game. Remember, they took a 5-4 lead, and then JT Miller tied it late, and then the Flames had to win it on a gorgeous goal by Connor Zary in overtime. So I think in so many ways it really did help set the tone. And even the way the guys came to the defense of their teammate Kevin Rooney on what I still think was a questionable body check at best by JT Miller, I think that brought the group together in some ways. And this is a team that has been willing to stand up for their teammates all season long, of course led by Ryan Lomberg, but he's not the only guy. So I absolutely think it helped set the tone. And for the Canucks, maybe not. I mean, I wonder where the Canucks are if there's not that whole squabble between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, if Quinn Hughes is healthy the whole year, if Thatcher Demko is available for most of the season. I think it probably had an impact on them, a negative one, but not to the extent that it had a positive impact on the Flames.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Obviously, we're all closer to the Flames, and so it's hard to pinpoint exactly the impact it had on the Canucks, but in the sort of soap opera that has been the Canucks season, it would be a few pegs down the list for me in terms of where things went wrong. But for the Flames, you know, I remember them being down 4-1 and sending a couple text messages. One of them was probably to Pat saying, "Huh, maybe it will be a long season. You know, this sure is an inauspicious start to what they hope would be a we're going to prove everybody wrong." And, you know, I do think if you go through the motions for the final two periods and you get your lunch fed to you by a division rival and here you come home for your season opener against the Philadelphia Flyers and you've just lost 7-2 in Vancouver, you're starting to wonder if people were right about your team. Mm-hmm. If your team is going to be a bottom feeder, like everybody said, and that it was what made night one so important for me. You know, the things that are burned in your memory include obviously the Anthony Mantha, Gordie Howe hat trick. You had that beautiful goal by Zary. There were some individual stuff, but it was really just the way the group banded together on the first night and said, no, this is not going to be the script that this follows. I do think that part was so, so key for the Flames.
Yep. I really think that the Flames side of it, I think, has been quite well established.
Yeah.
That, like,
it really set them on a path of belief and what happens if we play the right way and we're never out of a game and all that type of stuff. I really do think it set the stage for their, you know, 5-0-1 start, and you know, that 5-0-1 start is one that is still paying dividends now as they sit in the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. But I also think that it kind of, in a lot of ways, maybe set the table for Vancouver as well. Remember, they had Artur Shelov in net that night, and the Flames just kept beating him from the outside, and that's kind of underscored the goaltending instability Vancouver has been dealing with all year. Now, it's not going to be Shelov on Wednesday night. It will be Lankinen on the second half of the back-to-back, according to Rick Tocchet. But even still, it's been a very tumultuous season in net. If they don't sign Lankinen late in the offseason, it might be a complete disaster in net with Shelov being who he is and Demko not being able to be healthy. And then just the kind of instability that has been the hallmark of Vancouver's season, I think it kind of set the table for that. They had a 4-1 lead on home ice. They were rolling. They looked like a team that was going to be a factor, and they really at no point this year have truly gotten on track, and here they are with 18 games to go for them sitting on the outside. So I think in a lot of ways it kind of set the table for them and the struggles they've had this season too.
You know, it's funny. On their first topic, we talked about how it's game number 64 of 82. And, hey, if the Flames lose to the Canucks tonight, you'd obviously love to win this hockey game and take a three-point lead and have a game in hand and wrap up the head-to-head tiebreaker. But it's not the end of the world. But on the flip side, I think back to game one of 82. Where does this Flames season go if they get blown out of the building on October 9th?
Not here.
I don't think it gets to where we are. No. I really don't. So it's funny. Game one, in a way, feels today more important than game 64. And it's kind of crazy to say that.
Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Azam and Shan, our outstanding producers, as we start to wrap things up this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.